9 years before Galileo described the moon, Shakespeare seems to have known what was coming. In Act 5 of A Midsummer Night's Dream, his hero Theseus tells us with remarkable precision what was about to happen. He says, "The poet's eye in a fine frenzy rolling doth glance from heaven to earth, from earth to heaven, and as imagination bodies forth the forms of things unknown, the poet's pen turns them to shapes and gives to airy nothing a local habitation and a name." The poet did indeed now glance from earth to heaven, and imagination did body forth the forms of things unknown. The stars and planets, which had been the stuff of heaven before 1609, became real places. A scant 5 years after Galileo's discovery, with the shockwaves still reverberating, noted British scientist John Wilkins published a book with the remarkable title, The Discovery of a World in the Moon, or A Discourse Tending to Prove That 'Tis Probable There May Be Another Habitable World in That Planet. In this study of the newly secularized moon, Wilkins argued 13 propositions, some accurate, some not. The moon, he said, is solid and opaque. Like Earth, it's made of base and corruptible matter. It has no light of its own. It only reflects the sun. It has mountains and valleys, and it suffers meteor impacts. Wilkins argued that Earth orbits the sun just as the moon orbits Earth. This was long before Newton, and yet Wilkins accurately described how orbiting bodies stayed aloft. Wilkins said that the moon has an atmosphere, which he writes as two words, by the way. How did he know? It was because that's what creates the fuzzy edge of the shadow cast on Earth during a solar eclipse. He blew that one. He didn't realize that he was looking at the same fuzzy penumbra that we see along the edges of the shadow cast by a tree. And when he spoke of life on the moon, Wilkins, who had recently taken holy orders, allowed his arguments to shift from physical to theological. He worried about how Adam might have sired its inhabitants and whence their salvation might come. Wilkins' book was popular, and some remarkable people picked up on his ideas. First, a translation appeared in France, and Cyrano de Bergerac read it. That may need some explaining. Ever since Rostand wrote his play about Cyrano a century ago, we've laughed at his nose speech and wept as he dies reciting his love for Roxane in another man's name. But Cyrano was a real 17th-century writer, born 10 years after Galileo viewed the moon. He wasn't from Bergerac, but Paris. His nose was indeed substantial, and he did serve as a soldier. He was even wounded twice. Still, the swordsman, wit, and tragic figure of Rostand's play was not the historic Cyrano. Rather, he was built upon the revolutionary spirit of the real Cyrano. One of Cyrano's close friends had been the French intellectual heritor of Galileo, Pierre Gassendi. Gassendi was the early theorist who helped us move away from the old Aristotelian essences of earth, air, fire, and water toward an atomic theory of matter. He and Cyrano had a mutual affinity for intellectual revolution. After Cyrano left the army, he used his pen to deal with this world being transformed. He wrote until his death at the age of only 35. Writers around him hated his daring theatrical stuff. They called it wild and far-fetched. For if Galileo and Gassendi had built a new science of bold extremes, Cyrano would now build Baroque prose to match it. Toward the end of his short life, Cyrano turned the telescope of his imagination on Galileo's secular moon. He joined a very early handful of people who were using science fiction to deal with the new cosmos. Kepler had already used science fiction to tell about his sun-centered universe. That's how he kept out of trouble with the church. But Cyrano wrote much flashier stuff for a larger audience. The hero of his book, Voyage to the Moon, made several attempts to get there. He surrounded his body with glasses of morning dew. When the sun drew the water up, it drew him with it. A group of soldiers tied their ordnance to his flying machine, and it rose into the sky like a modern rocket. So 17th century thinkers used science fiction to come to grips with the newly discovered cosmos. You couldn't very well fantasize about going to a moon of pure Empyrean essence, but a flawed and tangible moon, well, that had the capacity for touching our dreams. The real Cyrano did not dream of some mythic Roxanne. He dreamt instead of a world being changed from the stuff of dreams into solid matter. His last novel, published after his death, was a wildly fanciful science fiction tale about actually visiting that Earth-like moon. The other inheritor of Wilkins' ideas was Dutch-English scientist Christiaan Huygens. He was 15 years younger than Wilkins and undoubtedly knew him. In 1698, Huygens wrote his own book promoting the likelihood of intelligent life on other planets. Of course, all these people got things wrong. But Wilkins' 11th proposition was prophetic. He wrote of alien beings upon the moon and said, "As their world is our moon, so our world is their moon." Those words immediately remind us of that mystical NASA picture of Earth seeming to rise like a great companion planet over the rim of the moon. And there, watching it happen, photographing it, were living intelligent beings after all. The moon had truly become a local habitation and a name.